We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Wednesday, January 8th, and we are hobbling, it feels like, toward January 20th, just waiting for Donald Trump to be able to get back into office and hopefully get some things at least taken care of and worked on, and some legislation passed over the first 100 days, especially, and even on day one. It seems like hopefully there should be some executive orders that will reverse a lot of Biden's nonsense the first day. So I'm looking forward to that. But in terms of what Congress's priorities are, let's welcome in Representative Tom Tiffany from the great state of Wisconsin, one of our favorite guests here from Congress, who does a lot of great work. And Happy New Year, Congressman Tiffany. Thanks so much for joining.
Yeah, Happy New Year, Jenna. Great to join you.
Yeah, I'm excited for 2025. And I think that, you know, God has given our nation a bit of a reprieve from what we could be facing in 2025 because of how the election in November went. So what is your perspective coming into the new Congress and the priorities for D.C.?
By the way, Jenna, isn't this why we always keep faith in the Lord? Because Amen. He does have a plan for us. And sometimes we don't see that plan, but he sees clearly, and it's why faith is so important, right?
Absolutely. So well said. And this is why we all need to be praying for our leaders and participating in government.
Yeah, so, you know, here we go, you know, in about a week or so, I think President Trump is going to be, I mean, he's already been very aggressive since November 5th. There's so many good things that have happened already, while there's been really some awful stuff happen. When you look at what President Biden, you know, he let some of the Guantanamo detainees go back to the Middle East. You know that they're going to go back and probably go to Syria or Afghanistan to hook up with ISIS and wreak havoc around the world. You know, that's part of what's going to be Joe Biden's legacy. Letting his son off, who was convicted, you know, doing these commutations of the death row inmates who committed some of the most heinous crimes that you'll ever see in mankind. And so we can't get there soon enough, but I think President Trump's going to act right away on January 20th. And the big debate that we have here in Congress at this point is, do we go with a two-bill approach in regards to reconciliation? And so we can do two reconciliation bills. And the big reason for that, and maybe you've covered it with your listeners, Jenna, is that it only takes 51 votes for a reconciliation bill in the Senate. Rather than having to clear cloture, which is 60 votes, which is extremely difficult, it just requires a majority. Well, we get to do one of those each fiscal year, which ends September 30th. So we could do two of them this year in 2025. So I'm actually an advocate of doing the two-bill approach. I would really like to see the border stuff, funding Tom Homan, his deportation efforts, and what he needs to do to secure the border. I think we need to do that absolutely as soon as possible. As we saw with the Lake and Riley vote yesterday, we don't want more victims like Lake and Riley. We have to make sure these people who have committed crimes, who already have deportation orders, they need to leave as soon as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think those priorities are important in terms of the voters' mandate. And do you think that that reflects the majority of the Republican conference and the speaker's priorities to focus on the border and then, of course, the economy, the national debt, inflation, you know, some of those things?
Yeah, you know, the big issues are, as you just laid out, it is illegal immigration, securing the border. I actually believe that's number one. I think President Trump believes that also. But close on its heels is number two, which is we got to rebuild this economy. It is in real, it is not in good shape at this point. We're limping along. The bond markets are telling us that our debt is becoming more and more risky. We have to do the things to get our economy back on track, and that is extend those tax cuts, maybe even make them better that were passed in Trump 1 back in 2017, as you remember very well. Get back to energy independence. Let's drill, baby, drill, right? I think we need to do work requirements for people. We've got almost 10 million people that are Americans that are not working, that should be working here in America rather than being on the dole. I think you do some of those things and then get some fiscal responsibility. Jody Arrington from Texas has identified $5 trillion of low-hanging fruit of cuts that we can make that will help us get back to fiscal responsibility. I think that will cause our economy to take off if we can accomplish those things.
Yeah, and those types of priorities seem like it would be very easy to do quickly as long as everybody is on board with those priorities. And what's been interesting is that at least in the media and certainly in the press conference that President Trump held at I think it was at Mar-a-Lago yesterday, talking about some of these things. I mean, he's talking about potentially, you know, doing something with Greenland, making Canada the 51st state. I mean, you know, as somebody who is a voter in this country and all, I mean, I'm thinking like, okay, the mandate isn't to go conquer Canada. Like, can we fix the priorities here in the United States first? And so it seems like that's a little bit of a distraction or maybe just a talking point in the media that doesn't necessarily cover the priorities like border security and the economy that really were the voting issues in November.
Yeah. Well, I can guarantee you we are focused on those issues that the voters voted on November 5th, and that is to secure the border and get the economy back rolling and making sure we have peace through strength on the world stage. We are very focused on that. Now, the rub is always, you know, people have different views, including in the Republican conference, of how we get there. We got to be able to navigate those and be able to deliver the best that we possibly can. For me, oftentimes, fiscal responsibility gets left behind. Making those cuts, because that doesn't get you a press release or a ribbon cutting. So I've seen it when I was in the State House. I've seen it here in Congress. That isn't the sexy stuff. The sexy stuff is saying, hey, we cut taxes. Sexy stuff is drill, baby, drill. I mean, that's the stuff that, you know, you get headlines for and you get ribbon cuttings and stuff like that. Doing the really hard work of identifying the waste and fraud that is that goes on in our government, that's really the hard work. And so oftentimes that gets left behind. There's a group of us that are doing everything we can to make sure that part of the process is also project number one, getting us back to fiscal responsibility, which will help us be able to bring down that debt funding interest rates.
I'm speaking with Congressman Tom Tiffany from the great state of Wisconsin. You can follow him at Rep. Tiffany on X. I would encourage you to do so and follow all of the members of Congress so that you are aware of, you know, some of the other things that are going on that we don't necessarily always have time to get into in a quick segment. And you post a lot of really good information, Representative Tiffany. And you mentioned, you know, drill, baby, drill. And Trump is now saying that he will revoke Biden's offshore drilling ban on the first day in office. I mean, this was really kind of a lame duck move of Joe Biden to try to hamper the incoming Trump administration. Is there anything, to your knowledge, that would prevent the Trump administration from simply reversing that drilling ban?
I don't believe so, but yeah, you really hit it when you said lame duck. It was a very lame move, wasn't it? I mean, think about it. Hamstringing the American people from being able to have affordable energy. Affordable energy is one of the number one ways, besides the deficit spending, it's the number one way in which we bring inflation down. Diesel fuel moves the world. How do you bring down the cost of groceries? One of the first things you do is bring down the cost of energy. That is, I mean, that's how we are going to accomplish that. So I think the president does have the ability to do that. If he's not able to do it, then we in Congress should be acting by doing something like the Congressional Review Act in order to rescind what President Biden is attempting to do. But, man, it is unbelievable what he's doing, going out the door, showing his hostility to the American people.
So true to call it hostility. And, you know, in the waning days of his last lame duck administration, and he has still time to get some of the pardons that, you know, some people are potentially anticipating. And I think that that's also frustrating for Americans to kind of just wait and see what else Biden is going to do next in the next, 12 days. But in terms of how listeners can help and encourage Congress to promote the truly America first priorities and the things that matter, why the majority of the American people voted for this new Congress, for this new administration, what are practical things that people can still do to participate and to let their voice be heard?
So let's talk about that fiscal responsibility side of it. So the DOGE was created with Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy leading that. I think that could be a powerful tool. I would urge people to follow that. And if you see something that is that wasteful spending that they're going to identify, contact your congressman and say, why are you guys funding that? And just because we have an R behind our name, don't assume that we are going to always do the right thing. We've seen that too often, Jenna. Never assume. Make sure you're contacting your congressman, especially the Republican congressman, and saying, we want you to get back to fiscal responsibility because it's the spending blowout that gave us this inflation. So I really urge people to stay engaged. And I want to take just another second for something that's really important in my home state of Wisconsin. And if for your Wisconsin listeners, this is really important. We have a state Supreme Court race coming up in early April. If the liberal wins this from Madison and Dane County, she believes in abortion all the way through up to 9 months. We are going to have a disaster with our state Supreme Court if she wins. We have a very good candidate running in Brad Schimmel. This is going to be for all the marbles in the state of Wisconsin because it will tip the court one way or the other, either progressive, liberal, or conservative. We really need these Wisconsinites to be engaged once again.
And when is that election happening?
The first Tuesday in April.
Okay. So for everybody in Wisconsin, I mean, this is an important election, and it's a great reminder, Representative Tiffany, that it's not just about the presidential election every 4 years. There are ongoing special elections. There are other things. I mean, the midterms will be here before we know it. There are a lot of different, not only special elections, but also appointments for vacancies. For example, when President Trump is bringing other Republicans into his administration, and we need to be paying attention to all of those, particularly in the state level elections and wherever you are, if you're in Wisconsin or any other state, know what's going on in your state, participate in those elections or, you know, contact whether it's the governor that's appointing someone or whoever it is to make sure that you let your voice be heard. So in just the last minute I have with you, Representative Tiffany, is there anything else that's coming up in this Congress that you're aware of that our listeners should be aware of as well?
So, as you know, Jenna, the Biden administration advanced pro-abortion policies, both in foreign policy and domestic policy, as much as possible. We need to be contacting the Trump administration and urging him to roll those things back. Taxpayers, regardless of how you feel about abortion, we cannot have taxpayer dollars being used to fund abortion. So make sure to stay engaged on that and encourage the Trump administration to roll those things back that the Biden administration foisted on the American people.
So well said. And for all of our AFR family, our AFA action team is very much engaged in this issue, because obviously pro-life is a very, very big deal. And it is one of the fundamental things and priorities that we should all be paying attention to. So you can also get all of that information at AFA Action. Thanks so much to Representative Tom Tiffany. We are praying for you as you continue to work on Capitol Hill for these important priorities. And we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation itself? Much like the abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescue, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And as there are snowstorms and frigid temperatures all up and down the East Coast, here in Florida, we are thinking it is absolutely freezing because it is below 40 degrees. And as someone who is a relatively new Floridian, heading into my third year being in Florida, I'm thinking this is not at all what I signed up for. Like, I want the heat and the humidity. But joining me now to commiserate on this is my good friend John Cardillo, who is a fellow Floridian. Happy New Year, John.
Happy New Year, Jenna. Great to be with you.
Yeah, so before we get into the more serious topic that I want to ask you about, I got to ask you, as somebody who's lived in Florida far longer than me, I was at the DMV last week. I know, feel very sorry for me, renewing my tags, and I had a revelation of Floridians who are not accustomed to the cold. And I noticed that, unlike Colorado, where I'm originally from, where we have, you know, all of the down jackets, and we've got the North Face, and we have, like, you know, the ski boots and all of these things that are built for cold weather, Floridians literally have nothing. Like, nobody is prepared for this, because I have to tell you, it was the most hilarious thing that probably 85% of the people there, rather than wearing the sandals, the flip-flops, the Crocs that, like, everybody in Florida does, their only footwear that they had were house slippers. And that's, like, because it was so cold, is that, like, a thing in Florida, that that's literally, like, nobody has UGG boots or anything?
Yeah, we really don't need them, right? But January, I've been here, so February will be 21 years. And I remember 2006, 2007, January, some nights got down to 20 degrees in Miami. So I'm in Fort Lauderdale now, right about 30 minutes north of there. But it was like, it would get down. It wasn't down in the 20s, 30s, one of those years. So it does happen. But our running joke was always, you know, when I lived down in Brickell, a lot of South Americans, and if it dropped below 60, they busted out the earmuffs. it was a little bit over the top with how people overreacted to the cold. The summer here was so hot and unbearably humid that I'm loving this weather. It's 51 right now in Fort Lauderdale. We needed a little bit of a cold blast to mitigate how bad the summer was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 51 isn't that bad, but like when I'm outside in the morning walking, you know, my dog's at 7 a.m. and it's pushing 35, like that's a little too chilly for me. I'm a little further north than you. So, you know, you're probably wise to be at least a little further south in the winter. But John, all right, let's get though to actually the topics I want to talk to you about. But I'm just laughing at like all the Instagram posts of the Floridians, like, oh my gosh, we can't handle this. It's just it's hilarious. And, you know, just makes my Floridian life happy. But Justin Trudeau announced his resignation on Monday. This coming from the Wall Street Journal. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said on Monday he will resign after almost a decade in power, bowing to members of his party who've been calling on him to step aside ahead of an election later this year. So he says that he will remain in office until a replacement is selected. We know that he and Trump have been going back and forth on, you know, a lot of these I think a little bit of pipe dream of, you know, Canada becoming the 51st state, some of these things. Yeah. But what's really going on in terms of just Canadian politics that Trudeau is actually resigning?
Well, you know, Trudeau is universally despised. So one of the things about South Florida, especially Fort Lauderdale and the West Coast, a lot of Canadians snowbird down here in season. In fact, people own the house right behind mine. Are a couple from Canada, and we become friendly. And we have polar opposite politics, right? Canadian liberals and you know, I'm who I am all the way on the right. But even they said he's an absolute disaster. Like, we voted for him the first time around, buyer's remorse. He's, the way they phrased it, an economic ignoramus. You know, so he's really plunged Canada into some dire straits economically. There, it's impossible to be competitive. But worse than that, he's just not an intelligent executive. The little day-to-day decisions he was making were making the lives of Canadians far worse, a lot like Eric Adams in New York, a lot like the officials in Los Angeles with these horrific fires. Now, we found out they cut $18 million from the fire department's budget, knowing wildfires are prevalent in California. And so he was doing, in very large part, what Democrats in the states are doing, and he was rejected in large part, much like Kamala was, for those policies.
Yeah, and so we've seen that potentially a more conservative leader may rise up in Pierre Poilievre, I think is, I'm probably mispronouncing, yep. I'm not French-Canadian-ing that enough, but, you know, he of course went viral for that clip. I think it was last year, just sitting there eating an apple while thoroughly demolishing a leftist reporter, and it was fabulous. But is he potentially the up and coming leader, or where do we sit in terms of waiting for a replacement for Trudeau?
Yeah, he seems to be the guy with the most traction right now. Yeah, you know, I don't know why Trump is out there attacking him. You know, people need to understand, Jenna, that you're never. Canada is culturally not the United States, right? I mean, most Canadians, even the ones who consider themselves conservative, or a good portion of them, you know, would still believe in gun bans. And they're not, there's no rallying cry, for example. So that, sorry about that, my very loud dog. But there's no,
that's
we
okay.
all have that problem.
Todd and Copper, always, yeah, they always yeah, chime in
yeah,
too.
But there's no, you know, so their brand of conservatism is very different than ours. And so when somebody like Trump is out there bashing, you know, Poilievre for various things, we have to remember, you know, we're at least forgetting some of what we want with a guy like that. He's not going to be a far-left ideologue with his head in the sand like Trudeau. But you're never going to see a U.S. conservative pick the reins in Canada. It's just culturally, I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Yeah, and I'm sitting with John Cardillo, who is a GOP strategist, and he's been around the political world and Trump world for quite a long time. And John, you know, it's interesting when you have kind of the MAGA segment calling some of these potential up and coming leaders conservatives, when, you know, really, as you mentioned, you know, this isn't actually what we as Americans would define as conservative. And when Trump is talking about, I mean, whoever replaces the prime minister, you know, when he's talking about making Canada the 51st state, you know, this is something that would really, if that were to happen, would immediately import just millions of probably Democrat votes. And so this doesn't seem, from just a sheer electoral perspective, to be a very smart idea.
No, not at all. And, you know, I had posted something like that on X, where I said, look, you know, doesn't Trump realize, you know, Penn is a nation of 40 million. They'll probably vote Democrat, especially if there's a seemingly centrist Democrat. They're going to think that's completely rational and exactly what they want. But you also have to remember the other issue with Canada. You have those same 40 million people. They're on socialized health care. Who's absorbing that cost? Right? These people aren't going to all of a sudden go get insurance and buy into the marketplace. They have a completely socialized nation when it comes to social services. Same with Greenland. Okay, 56,000 people. But now we're talking about 40 million, 56,000 people coming, you know, being annexed into the United States. I don't think any of this is going to happen. But Trump's proposal is to annex over 40 million people that are all living in socialized economies. I just don't think much thought went into these talking points. I don't even know what to call them.
Yeah, maybe just kind of some propaganda, frankly, in the media. But I mean, you know, this isn't the historic, like, Alexander the Great type of wars to, you know, go to, you know, conquer foreign countries. And, you know, they didn't really have the assimilation kind of view, I guess, that we would. I mean, and I think it's absolutely ridiculous to assume that even if Canada were to become the 51st state, that they would immediately become Americans in terms of what we are accustomed to and our form of government, our way of life, because you said, I mean, it is very socialist. They have single payer health care. I mean, a lot of different things that are distinct from how the U.S. Runs our own government and policy. And so how exactly would that really work? But it's interesting. And you also posted this yesterday on X, John, that said we went from no foreign wars in America first to let's invoke the Monroe Doctrine to take Canada, Greenland, and the Panama Canal in 2 months. I'm just over here eating popcorn, watching the show. And I think that's very apt. And on the whole Panama Canal thing, this is what Trump had to say in his pledge to have legislation to change the name of the Gulf of Mexico. This is cut three.
We're going to be changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, which has a beautiful ring that covers a lot of territory. The Gulf of America, what a beautiful name. And it's appropriate. It's appropriate.
I mean, John, you know, I don't know about you, but if you ask the majority of the American people who voted against socialism, Marxism, communism of Kamala Harris, I don't think that renaming the Gulf of Mexico was anywhere near the top, like, you know, 1 million priorities for the incoming Trump administration. I mean, like, what is going on?
I think it's all, look, Trump, I'm going to come out right out and say it. Trump caved on H-1 visas, and he took an incredibly far left position on asking for elimination of the debt ceiling. So we went from mass deportations on day one to where we are now, which is maybe we'll get around to arresting, to deporting the criminal illegals when they're arrested and we have them on ICE detainers. So one major campaign promise seems to have been backtracked on. Expanding the H-1s is a disastrous policy because, quite frankly, everybody who's supporting that is lying to our faces that there's no H-1 abuse and that this is only going to be for the top 0.1% of tech workers. It's simply not true. You can look at the H-1 databases. They're filling jobs with H-1s like line and staff accountant. Well, give me a break. There are plenty. And I actually sat with a friend of mine last night. His son is 35, a bit of an older guy here in the neighborhood. His son's a CPA looking for a good job. A brilliant guy who went to one of the top schools and is a licensed CPA. There are Americans to fill those jobs. They're just more expensive than the Indians. So I think the Greenland thing, the Canada thing, the Panama Canal, the Gulf of America, these are all distractions. This is just red meat for the base. Because the Trump base, we've learned one thing, and I get flamed when I say it. They love a show, but they're not demanding substance. And so they're all cheering, Gulf of America, Gulf of America, while we're expanding the H-1 program, and Indians are going to come here and take their jobs. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more that we need to collectively, as conservatives, demand substance, not just the shiny kind of messaging that Trump is, frankly, very good at. I mean, to say, you know, the Gulf of America, it seems so America first and look at what we're doing and you know, we're conquering. But it really isn't substantive because I don't really care what the name is. I want to have actual effective policies that impact my daily life because no matter, I mean, we could call it, you know, the Gulf of Mars after Elon, and it really wouldn't change my daily life. It wouldn't change anything here in America. So, yeah. And so all of these things, I mean, even like the show that we had yesterday of, you know, Donald Trump Jr. and a few of these other influencers landing in Greenland and, you know, they had their little Trump Force One embroidered jackets. And I'm thinking, you know, when I worked for Trump, we all had that. It was all the merchantainment type of philosophy of look at the pictures, all this. And it's all just this glitz when really there was no substance behind that photo op either.
No, and, you know, I had this conversation with some people last night, and I said if we were serious about buying Greenland, I doubt the emissaries to kick that deal off would have been Don Jr. and Charlie Kirk. No affront to them, just not what they do, right? I mean, there would have been, you know, real players there, finance people and diplomatic types who are loyal to Trump. He would have sent more serious negotiators. That was for the photo op because both of those guys have tremendous social media followings. So from a PR perspective, Don Jr. and Charlie Kirk standing in Greenland with kind of a cryptic message, I think it says Greenland is beautiful or something like that. Well, that gets the base going, right? Now the base isn't talking about H1. The base isn't criticizing Trump and Elon. They're just sharing this photo saying, rah, 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 MAGA. Which is, again, I don't think anything has come of it. It's a great – why would – look, if Greenland has, and it's we know they do, these trillions of dollars in resources, why in the world would the Danes ever give that up? And so what are we going to do, spend trillions with a T of dollars we don't have to buy Greenland? Everybody, well, it's strategic, it's this. Yeah, we won the Cold War and World War II without it. And those two wars were predominantly fought up in that theater. So I don't think it's detrimental to the survival of the U.S. as they're trying to sell it. But, I mean, it's money we don't have right now. You know, we've got still got $9 trillion in debt. We can't be buying an island for trillions of dollars. It's kind of, the whole concept to me is very silly.
Yeah, and the whole concept of good stewardship, perhaps. And hopefully, you know, Congress will be a little more concerned about substance than necessarily just the PR. And so, John Cardillo, before I let you go, I want to ask you about one other story as well, which is the Senate confirmation hearings that are set for Trump nominees. We could see the appointments going in to their Senate confirmation hearings as early as next week. And so some of those that may be up as quickly as next week may be Pete Hegseth for a defense secretary and Pam Bondi for United States Attorney General. So what happened to, you know, recess appointments and what do you anticipate if the Senate does start holding hearings next week?
I think the current crop of nominees will be confirmed. The Democrats tried to drop a lot of opposition research early on. It was thoroughly debunked. I think the lies, they were lies. I mean, I know Pete a bit. I know a lot of his colleagues over at Fox, some very close friends. And to a person, they said, well, you know, behind closed doors, off the record, this guy doesn't drink. Like, they're making him out. He's professional. He's on set early. He's always put together. This is a horrible smear campaign. And then a bunch of them went on the record. Will Kane went on the record. Rachel Campos Duffy went on the record saying this NBC story is an absolute lie. So I think that blew back on the Democrats. So I think Hegseth is going to go easier than anybody anticipated. The rest of them will get through. But I think, you know, you nailed it, Jenna, with regards to no recess appointments. We're backing off the deportations. My prediction is we're going to have a George W. Bush-type presidency without the foreign wars. It's going to be fine. But it's going to be a mainstream GOP presidency, and it's not going to be transformative. Nobody's getting perp-walked out of DOJ or FBI.
Yeah, well, what about Kash Patel? If he is confirmed for the FBI director and, you know, all of the promises of how he's going to go in and shake things up.
Yeah, I think Kash wants to do exactly that. But you got to remember, Pam Bondi, you know, Pam is a lobbyist with Ballard & Associates, one of the largest mainstream lobbying firms in D.C. She's got to go back there or do something similar after her tenure as AG. So she's not going to rock that many D.C. boats because that firm services typically Republicans, but issues for both sides of the aisle if they pay well. And so I don't think Pam's going to do the harm to the deep state that everybody's hoping. I just don't think we're going to see a transformational shakeup. You know, Cash has to report to Pam Bondi and to Trump. And the thing that's bothering me about DOJ and FBI, Trump's not talking about making a change at the Office of Inspector General. So I believe Michael Horowitz, who pretty much gave the FBI a pass for FISA and everything else, he implicated them a bit, but really never went anywhere. We're not hearing about his replacement. And that's concerning to me, which tells me it's going to be much more of the same.
Well, John, I really appreciate your insights because I think, you know, overall, with everything that we've been talking about in this segment, the bottom line is that for people and for those who listen regularly to this show, I think you are definitely in this category that you care about actual policy and substance over just the optics. That's where we need to focus, is to say, okay, you know, while all of this kind of glitz and, you know, woohoo, Greenland and Gulf of America and whatever, what about the promises that were made for mass deportations, for ending the Ukraine war so we're not spending a bunch more of the money that we don't have over in Ukraine? I mean, all of these things, fixing the economy, reducing inflation, I mean, even to make sure that we secure the border. I mean, all of these things are priorities that we voted for, and we need to hold the incoming Congress and the Trump administration accountable for doing substantive things within the first, not just 100 days, but first day and first 30 days. So we got to make our voices heard. Thanks so much, John. We'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And we are going to cover a topic in this next segment that is very just utterly horrific and gruesome. This is, of course, out of the UK and the Pakistani gangs. And so if you are listening on our American Family Radio channels and you have younger kids or, you know, anybody who this topic is probably not appropriate for them, I want to give you an opportunity right now, if you're listening live or later on the podcast, to, you know, maybe either pause the podcast and come back later, or because you definitely want to hear about this story. But if you're listening live, you know, maybe turn over to our music station and listen to that for a few minutes while we tackle this just really difficult topic that really, you know, is more of, unfortunately, adult content. So while you are all doing that, I want to welcome in my guest for this topic, who is Orrin McIntyre, an author and host at The Blaze. And Orrin, you know, as this story has unfolded and I'm learning more about what has gone on in the UK over decades, this is just utterly tragic. And it makes me, frankly, very angry because, you know, especially as Christians, but, you know, anybody who understands there's a difference between right and wrong, good and evil, this is utterly evil. And the accusation here basically is that the leadership of the United Kingdom just turned a blind eye to the thousands of girls that have been victims of Pakistani gangs and systematic rape of children for decades. And some of these just utterly horrific stories. And The Blaze put out an article that was saying that for years, and now I'm quoting The Blaze, for years, authorities failed to help the victims and hold these rapists accountable in part because of, quote, nervousness about race. That is utterly disgusting. So, Orrin, you know, thanks for joining on this topic and, you know, your thoughts on this.
Yeah, this is something that a lot of people in the United States are learning about for the first time, but actually, as you point out, has been going on for over a decade. The Rotherham scandal broke many years ago, and the UK government, it became very clear, had turned a blind eye to immigrant communities, specifically Pakistani Muslim grooming gangs. And they were just calling them grooming gangs as a euphemism, because what they are is organized rape gangs. These are gangs that were set up to sexually exploit British women, specifically younger women and children. They basically had the line that because these women were not Muslim, they did not deserve protection in the same way that a Muslim woman would be respected under their laws. And so therefore, these men could do whatever they wanted to these women. And because the British government had been so deeply invested in the idea of a multicultural society and not rocking the boat and not wanting to put one community out there and make them the center of attention, they repeatedly and routinely turned a blind eye to this kind of crime. In fact, in many cases, the women themselves were blamed by the authorities because maybe they were found drunk and they were arrested for something like that, even though the men were obviously involved in sexual assault against these women. And really, it's coming now to the forefront because of Elon Musk. There was recently a trial of one of the men involved in this act, and the description read out during the trial was so horrific that it started kind of reawakening something that people had known in the UK was going on for a long time. And that's when Musk picked it up and started sharing it on Twitter, and that's why now a lot of Americans are hearing about this for the first time.
Yeah, and I mean, and I'm one of them, frankly, that is hearing about this for the first time, and I've been following a lot of what Elon has been posting on social media, and he even posted just last week, and this is a quote from Elon's ex, "In the UK, serious crimes such as rape require the Crown Prosecution Service's approval for the police to charge suspects. Who was the head of the CPS when rape gangs were allowed to exploit young girls without facing justice? Keir Starmer, 2008 to 2013. So this has now kind of been a Musk against, you know, the UK PM and a lot of the leaders and a lot of the Labour Party leaders and all of that in the UK. And so how may this advance now that it's kind of on the world stage? It's not just a sort of UK internal scandal. How may this play out for specifically Starmer?
Well, honestly, it's very disappointing because while Elon is doing absolutely the right thing and bringing this kind of international pressure, the world now knows about this. It's not just a small story that's been confined to the UK at this point. Unfortunately, the way that a lot of the British intelligentsia and media is responding is rallying around Starmer and saying, oh, well, Elon Musk is some foreign billionaire trying to meddle in our politics. And the story, if you look at most of the British media, has been about, oh, this is foreign interference in our affairs and our elections. And this is really horrific because, again, this was allowed to go on for over a decade. The amount of women that were brutally treated this way is just absolutely stunning. And this is why you saw the riots and other things that built up in the UK over the last year, because this is something that the British public has been dealing with for a long time. None of them voted for this. None of them wanted this. They all hate Keir Starmer, and yet somehow he is still in charge. And the problem is there isn't a good alternative because, of course, in the face of this scandal, yes, Labour was in charge of these issues during the time that it was kind of at its highlight, but the Conservative government continued to bring in large amounts of Muslim migrants, even knowing that this was going on, even having the Rotherham scandal break. And Farage, who is supposed to be kind of the far-right option in the Reform Party, is himself still soft on this issue. Elon Musk was going after Farage, saying he can't even get this done. So the British public really have nowhere to turn. Even their farthest right party is still playing footsie with the Muslim vote, saying, oh, well, ultimately, it's not really their fault, and we need to be careful about this issue. No one has the, you know, just the strength and courage to stand up and say, no, there is a specific group of people who are victimizing our children, and this has to be addressed. There has to be a serious payback for what happened here.
Absolutely. And can we just talk about the fact, I'm speaking with Orrin McIntyre, who is an author and host at The Blaze Media, about this whole notion that you referenced earlier about multiculturalism and diversity and how, I mean, if this were, let's face it, you know, older white men, they probably would be brought to justice. But because the allegation here is that the UK authorities didn't want to disrupt this you know, one particular group and they were very concerned about race, then they're emphasizing multiculturalism and diversity, basically, rather than justice. And that is absolutely a leftist, Marxist priority that is utterly wrong and evil.
Well, unfortunately, this is the consequence of a multicultural society. When you have a situation where you bring in a large amount of people with a radically different value system, again, these men believe that they were basically immune to any moral ramifications of their actions because the UK women, the white women, were not Muslim, and so they did not count. And so they saw the people of the UK as a foreign entity that they could prey upon. And when you import a bunch of people with that ideology into your country, and then you yourself, like you said, have this leftist idea of we can never criticize anyone of another race, we can never call out their bad behavior, we can never notice when it's a specific group of people with an ideology and a culture that is attacking our people, that when you have that mentality and you have to dance around it and you have to be so concerned with being called racist all the time that you would close your eyes to the rape of your own daughters, your own children, that is just a civilizational death sentence. And unfortunately, it isn't confined to the UK. Remember that after 2020, we had the Ferguson effect, and a lot of our police officers stopped policing neighborhoods of color because they were so terrified of being called racist or getting put into a position like Derek Chauvin, where they get locked into jail for the rest of their lives. They just didn't do their jobs anymore. And it wasn't just the, you know, of course, many communities suffered, but specifically the communities they stopped policing, those suffered the most, because it turns out that black communities need law and order just the same as every other community. And so this is an effect that doesn't just hit the UK, it hits the United States as well.
Yeah, and this is exactly why the Bible says to not pervert justice, and in several references talks about and addresses the idea of partiality and saying, for example, in Leviticus 19:15, you shall do no injustice in judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor nor honor the person of the mighty. In righteousness, you shall judge your neighbor. And in Deuteronomy 16, you shall not pervert justice. You shall not show partiality. You shall not accept a bribe. And it goes on and saying, you know, about subverting the cause of the righteous. And showing partiality basically means, you know, any of these sort of isms that the left has put up instead of moral virtue, which are things, you know, like sexism, racism, and stratifying the human experience and stratifying human beings based on our distinct characteristics. And if we are valuing diversity and saying that people of a certain race or minority or heritage, we are partial to them over justice, that is absolutely denying what God has set forth in his moral law that is eternal. And this isn't something that was just for Old Testament Israel. This is something the moral law of God transcends time and space and culture and is for every type of government and every nation if they want to follow they want to follow the principles of morality. And so this is, I think, Oren, a cautionary tale for the United States, that even in just the ways that you mentioned, that our own justice system occasionally and maybe systemically, if we can borrow that term from the left, shows partiality rather than enforcing justice, it will only get worse unless we stop it. And so how can conservatives and Christians especially advance the cause of righteous justice, not just this quote-unquote social justice, in our society?
Well, like you said, it has to start with not favoring people just because they are quote-unquote oppressed. You know, the Bible says don't favor the poor man in court. But it also means that we need to have real restrictions. We have to understand that you can't import a large number of people from a foreign country that have a foreign religion belief system that they do not see the people of your country the same as their own in-group, and then expect anything different. We need restriction on who we allow into the country, and then we also need to have a more biblically grounded view of what truth and justice is and the way that we approach things. We cannot stratify our justice system based on race or ethnicity or religion. We cannot have that kind of system in a country that is, frankly, as diverse as we have now. It would be best if we limited the number of people coming in with that ideology, and when those people are here, they need to be treated exactly the same as anyone else inside our borders.
Well said, Orrin McIntyre. Really appreciate it and your comments for this story. And this is why the biblical view of all human beings have inherent dignity and worth, because we are all made in the image of God. We are God's children if we accept the free gift of salvation and come into a saving knowledge of Him. But we all carry, regardless of our view of God, or even if you outright reject God, you are still made in His image. And we as human beings must respect and value the Imago Dei of others and not show this partiality. And this is also why, for Christians, we have to engage not just on the life issues and the obvious Christian issues, but things like border security, things like the justice system. All of these come down to, do we follow biblical principles or secular other things? You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.